Chapter 10.
That smile is faker than a stripper's tits, and your cloaking device is shit. This phone is streaming live encrypted footage directly to a secured server at Area 51, and if you even think about trying to probe me, you fucking alien doppelganger, you're gonna get a face full of...
Yup, that's Saul, I whispered. I glanced back at Emma, Fila, and Floppy. And now I have to convince him that we're not aliens. Don't come out until I say, okay?
Certainly.
Emma clasped her hands together demurely.
I do want to make a good impression on your father. I'm going to come out fighting if I hear a fight,
Fila warned. Do what you have to do, Fila. I held my hands up, then I strode out to meet my father in this universe for the first time. The Dep had landed right in the middle of Saul's clearing, and a nearly perfect replica of Honest Abe had settled into the grass right in front of us. Around the edge of the dirt circle, Saul's other rusting junk buckets sat at various angles. It was as though the dirt circle had actually warped the space around it instead of just erasing it.
Surrounded by fucking landmines and even your weird space bending!
Saul stopped talking and lowered his shotgun as I rounded the corner. He had the same wrinkled face, rim of curly gray hair, and big straight nose as my Saul. But instead of his signature fuck commies baseball cap, he wore a yellow don't tread on me cap with the coiled up rattlesnake on the front. He had a white smartphone in the pocket of his ratty gray bathrobe that fell open to reveal an equally ratty tank top and plaid boxers. His brown eyes widened as he stared at my face, and then he raised his shotgun again.
What are you, a clone? When the hell did you bastards clone me? Tell your bosses that they fucked up. I was never that handsome. Uncle Saul!
I could feel a lump forming in my throat, and I swallowed it back. I had resigned myself to never seeing the man who'd raised me as his nephew again, and it seemed like he hadn't raised me at all in this universe.
I'm not your clone, okay? I'm your son. You just called me uncle, and I don't fucking like what you're implying here.
Saul squinted down the barrel of his shotgun at me.
Or are you all just really fucking stupid aliens?
Okay, I know it's weird that I called you that, but hear me out. I kept my hands raised, but my heart was going like crazy, and I knew I was starting to sweat a little. I was named after great-grandpa David, who was an accountant, but everyone calls me Dave. I came here on a parallel universe traveling machine that you invented. And in that universe, I was your kid, but you couldn't deal with having a kid after Doris died, so you gave me to Miriam to raise. I thought you were my uncle for a really long time. I only found out because of a letter you wrote to me in case the Men in Black got you. And they did. But I guess you weren't at home when it happened, because you sent me this video, and I went out and got the machine just before they got me. And now I'm kind of lost. I realized that I was out of breath. And I was also out of words. I dropped my hands, shrugged, and grinned at Saul. I could really only hope that he actually believed me. I could also only hope that a crisis would be quick enough to protect me if he decided to try shooting at me.
So what? You want me to step into your badly disguised spaceship and take a look at it?
Saul regarded me over the barrel of his gun, but he still didn't shoot.
That was a weird fucking story, Dave. Grandpa Davey ran the numbers racket for the Purple Gang. I never knew a Doris, and I never would have abandoned a kid I knew I had. Who the fuck are you? Really?
I was named after a fucking gangster? My jaw dropped. And you never told me this? Or is our family just a lot cooler in this universe? Do we have any mob money left?
Holy shit. You are my kid.
Saul let out a barking laugh and lowered his shotgun.
And you brought your girlfriend along?
I actually met Dave in a parallel universe.
The crisis took my hand.
It was a world that had been ravaged by extraterrestrial life forms, so I understand your fear. I was the only survivor. My name is a crisis, but you can call me Raz if you like.
I was sort of impressed by a crisis's lie, although technically she hadn't said anything that wasn't untrue. I could understand why she didn't want to tell Saul that she was an extraterrestrial slime mold from another universe.
Well, Dave and Raz, it's nice to meet you both.
Saul slung his shotgun over his shoulder, strode over to us, and held out his hand.
You obviously already know me.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, I felt a tear well up in my eyes as I shook the old man's hand. "Should I just go back to calling you Uncle? It's just..."
"Call me whatever you like, as long as you don't get misty every time," Saul grinned, then turned to Acrasis with his hand out. "All right, Raz, why do you talk like a fucking robot trying to get paid for phone sex?"
"Insufficient socialization."
Acrasis kept her hands inside her pockets.
"I apologize for not shaking your hand. I have a phobia of..."
"It's fine. It's just a formality."
Saul tapped the phone inside his pocket.
"Listen, this video isn't going anywhere but my own servers, but it's still recording. Now, I'm guessing you want your crazy scientist uncle to look at your parallel universe machine and see if he can fix it for you, right?"
"Yeah, that'd be great," I grinned, gestured Saul toward us, and then started to go back around the corner of the house where the girls and Floppy were waiting. "We can't control where it goes, and we can't stay anywhere for more than 3 days because otherwise some hyperdimensional monsters will be able to track us through your DNA.
"Wait, what?"
Saul stopped in mid-stride.
"That's a whole nother story, kid. Any other surprises before I see whatever's inside your log cabin?"
"There are 2 other women and a woolly mammoth with us,"
Acrasis said.
"We agreed it would be better if they stayed out of sight until we ascertained the safety of our environment. And now we have ascertained that it is safe."
"Why?"
Saul began, but his eyes widened and his jaw dropped a little as Floppy came galloping around the corner with Fila on his back and Emma behind her.
"Hello, Mr. Meyer."
Emma waved like a pageant queen as Floppy skidded to a halt a few yards in front of us. She patted Floppy, slid off his back, and curtsied.
"I am Emma Newbold, and it's lovely to make your acquaintance. David has spoken very highly of you."
"Call me Saul."
Saul pasted on his widest smile, the one he always used when he had someone he needed to charm. But his eyes betrayed confusion. He inclined his head in a bow toward Emma.
"Mr. Meyer was my father."
"I am Fila."
Fila raised a hand in greeting. Then she patted Floppy on the head.
"This is Floppy. He came with me from my world."
Floppy raised his trunk and let out a tootling little trumpet.
"Is that a pygmy fucking woolly mammoth?"
Saul gaped. His hand hovered near Floppy's trunk.
"Yes, and he likes to be petted."
Fila grinned wide enough to show off her adorable little curved fangs.
"Hey, buddy."
Saul stroked Floppy's hairy trunk. Then he laughed as the little mammoth used the end of his trunk to nose Saul's hand.
"You looking for a treat? I got nothing, sorry."
"Mr. Meyer, I'm sorry, Saul. Do you really think you can fix the machine?"
Emma asked.
"It would be really lovely to be able to stay in a world for longer than just 3 days. Although, to be quite honest, we haven't yet found a world that we care to live in for much longer than that. Still, it would be quite wonderful to have the option."
"I'll take a look at it," Saul said with a shrug. "But I don't know how much I can tell you about something I never even started to build."
"I guess you'd know your own work, right?" I asked. I gestured for him to follow me, then started to head back around the other side of the cabin toward the door. "Maybe you'll be able to take a look at the circuitry to figure it out or something."
"You're putting a lot of faith in... What the fuck?"
Saul clamped his hand around the stock of his shotgun, but he didn't lift it off of his shoulder. He lifted his shaking free hand and waved a pointing finger at the dead bodies and armor that were scattered around the front of the house.
"Aztecs," I explained. "They kind of attacked us."
"What the fuck were the Aztecs doing in Michigan?"
Saul bent down and prodded at one dead warrior's armored bicep.
"Got a feeling it wasn't painting murals all over Verner and Bagley."
"Apparently repelling the Spanish and conquering all the other natives,"
Emma said. She lifted her chin, and her eyes flashed bright blue for just a moment.
"We managed to convince the local tribe to take up arms and rebel. It was quite inspiring. Your son gave quite a speech."
"And that's why they attacked you, huh?"
Saul flicked a fingernail against the dead warrior's helmet, then he stood up.
"So you need some corpse disposal help as well as the whole parallel universe machine thing?"
We've actually got that covered." I tried not to glance at Acrasis as I opened the door to the cabin, since I was pretty sure she'd do her body disposal act when Saul wasn't around to see. "Come on in. The place isn't really done yet, but it's nearly watertight."
"Oh, that's reassuring,"
Saul grumbled, but he followed me inside the cabin anyway. He raised his eyebrows as his eyes slid from side to side.
This looks like my old frat house in Ann Arbor. Crates, futons, and a couple of hoopties.
Hey, Honest Abe here is the obliging shell of your invention. I patted the old Lincoln Continental on its rusting top, then popped the hood open to reveal the console. This is the dimensional engine, patent pending.
Let me guess. Saul's eyes scanned over the console. The yellow countdown that says 01, 18, 42, 37 is how long you're set to stay here.
Yeah, and we can even add time. I did a quick calculation in my head, then added 5 more hours. Now we've got a nice even 2 days.
And the green 39 at the bottom is what? How many universes you've been in?
Saul asked. It's how many meters wide our territory is. I pointed at the edge of the dirt circle. It adds 6 meters to the diameter of the dirt circle every time we jump.
How?
Saul squinted at the console, then he rapped at the stainless steel facade.
What the fuck is in here? I think we need to crack this baby open and see what's under the hood.
My Saul suggested that we not fuck with the power source, I said. I pointed at the red numbers on top that read 160137. This is the quantum signature of the universe we're currently in. I haven't really been writing them down.
How the fuck do you expect me to try and fix this thing if I can't poke around inside it?
Saul held up his hands in a shrug, rolled his eyes, and then dropped his hands.
Or am I supposed to slide into the passenger seat and fuck around with the gear shift or something?
Nope, this is it. I shook my head. I mean, my Saul did suggest that the power source was buried in the ground, so maybe if you take off the console, it'll be fine.
How?
Saul squatted down, looked at the side of the console dead on, and then started to feel around the edges.
No screws, no ports. This thing feels like it's welded to something. Did you ever see your Saul work on it?
Not on Honest Abe specifically, but he talked a lot about parallel universes. I slid my watch from my wrist, held it up, and then pressed the button that let Saul's last recording play. Here, you kind of explain things yourself in this. Saul held the watch to his ear as his long, final voice message to me played. His face went from confused to interested to grim, and then settled into thoughtful as the message wound down. He nodded slowly as he gave the watch back to me.
Explains a lot to you, but almost bupkis to me, he said. Sorry, kid. I get the general gist, but I stopped fucking around with all that quantum dimensional superstring shit back in the 90s. Kind of had to start focusing on keeping shit together right here on this plane of existence.
Why? What happened in the 90s? I asked. I knew I'd been born in 1996, but since Saul hadn't met Doris or had me in this timeline, I didn't know what else might have changed in his life.
They rent history books at the library, you know, Saul said.
He patted the console, sighed, and then headed back toward the door.
Come on, let me grab some of my tools. There's a gap around the top and sides that makes me think it might just be fitted on real close. And if I can wiggle that fucker off, I can probably check to see if there are any shorts, frayed wires, shit like that.
Okay, I get that the 90s had everything from Nirvana to Invader Zim, but I guess I'm just trying to figure out where our worlds diverged. I explained, as I followed Saul to the familiar beat-up garage that was his laboratory. I glanced back at the girls, noticed that Acrasis was standing guard and Philo was tracking something in the woods, and gestured to a wide-eyed Emma to follow me. Like, who's president right now?
F. Ferris Fremont.
Saul swung the door open, beckoned me inside, and held the door for Emma.
Doesn't sound familiar,
I admitted, as I peered into the still dark lab. I'd sort of been hoping that Saul would name someone hilariously unlikely, like Joe Rogan, Henry Rollins, or Vermin Supreme, but it just sounded like some boring politician.
He's a Bible-thumping, flag-waving corporate leech like the rest of them.
Saul flicked a switch somewhere in the dark, and the buzzing fluorescent lights on the ceiling flickered to life. Saul's lab was more organized and focused than I'd ever seen it. Usually the old man had half a dozen projects halfway finished on twice as many workbenches, chalkboards covered in overlapping designs and notes, and little piles of scrap metal or discarded tools floating around here and there. Now, half a dozen glowing black monitors with white and green text scrolling across them were mounted around the 3 solid walls of the garage. Multicolored cables ran from their backs to shining black and white server towers that were arrayed on metal shelves, multi-tiered keyboards, and what looked like a 3D printer. Standing against the closed garage door were a huge professional slide-out toolbox, a rack of gardening tools, and a white mini-fridge.
"So this is what modern science looks like,"
Emma whispered to me.
"It's all screens again."
"All right, you, what's your deal?"
Saul glanced over his shoulder as he pulled drawers out of the toolbox.
"Are you a time traveler, Warnerette steampunk version of Vivian Leigh? And I'm talking the Scarlett O'Hara version."
"I am, as my parents raised me to be, sir."
Emma lifted her chin, but her small, slim hand sought mine.
"I'm afraid that my world was devastated in an electrical catastrophe over 100 years ago, and we only had a few survivors. We haven't had much opportunity to take part in the march of progress, and I don't know this Vivian Leigh woman."
"Okay, then."
Saul raised both of his hands, then he bent down and started to rifle through his toolbox again. He pulled out a pair of long, skinny pliers, eyed them, and then stuck them inside one of the pockets of his ratty robe.
"Did all your girlfriends survive some kind of apocalypse, Dave?"
"Phila was just separated from her tribe," I began, but Emma slipped her arm around my waist and laid her head on my shoulder, and I couldn't help but grin.
"Rather more than friends, I should think,"
Emma murmured.
"Huh, really?"
Saul's craggy face cracked into a sincere grin.
"I was kinda kidding about the girlfriend thing. You mean all three of—"
"We all love Dave,"
Acrasis said from the doorway. She sauntered inside with her hands inside the pockets of her leather jacket.
"We have all agreed to share him as our mate and bear his cubs,"
Phila said as she strode in on Acrasis's heels. She held up a broken-necked, long-tailed pheasant, licked her bloodied lips, and spat a greenish-blue feather out of her teeth.
"And I am happy to share this colorful bird with all of you for breakfast."
"Phila, the champion of the world!"
I raised my hands up in triumph, then I glanced at Saul to see if he got the reference. I had fond memories of reading Roald Dahl books with the old man.
"Poach away, kitty,"
Saul laughed, shoved more tools into his pockets, and closed the toolbox.
"Wild game's just about the only thing that's free out there ever since the DNR shut down. I'm just impressed you found one. Come on, let's go take a crack at that thing."
"I have a feeling I shan't understand much of what's in there,"
Emma said as we trickled back out of the garage and onto the base.
"Saul, do you think it would impede your concentration too terribly if we worked on improving our household a bit while you're engaged with that machine?"
"It depends on how much noise you're planning to make," Saul said.
"If noise is a factor, we can certainly go outside and try to start a bit of a garden. Working the earth oughtn't to make too much of a commotion, and I've got some wonderful notes from Grandmother Honeybee about mound planting. We're just going to need some fish heads."
"Grocery store sells fish," Saul said.
He strode through the cabin door, headed toward Honest Abe's hood, and pulled out what looked like a long, thin dentist scalpel.
"Might want to go out and stock up on shit you need while you can. There aren't a lot of pheasants left around here."
I kind of left my wallet in my home universe," I sighed. "I'd also left a bank account containing millions of Saul's dollars in my home universe, but I didn't think that could help any."
"I'll spot you a few dollars," Saul said.
He poked at the thin uniform crack that separated the very top of the console from the sides.
"You need fish. What else?"
"I'm not even sure if we're ready for the fish heads yet, to be honest. We've still got to plan out our garden, and we'll need to figure out an irrigation system and a rain barrel or two. And there are some seeds I couldn't save from my last harvest I'd rather like to pick up. Carrots, beets, maybe a few herbs."
"You're talking black market shit, you know."
Saul looked over his shoulder at Emma and grinned.
"I like it."
"Black market beet seeds?" I repeated, just to confirm that I'd heard it all correctly. "Not weed, not peyote, beets?"
"Nobody gives a shit about weed anymore," Saul said.
He probed at the crack with the thin scalpel.
"Yes, beets. Lucky you won't stick around long enough for Monsanto to send their fucking lawyers with guns after you for cutting into their profits."
"You can't possibly tell me that simply collecting water from the sky is illegal,"
Emma protested.
"Oh, don't even get me started."
Saul shook his head and stuck the scalpel back into his pocket.
"All right, kid, I won't be able to crack it open without potentially compromising whatever's on the inside. And my other self didn't exactly go into a lot of technical detail there, So this is going to be really important. You know my other self a lot better than I do. Do you think it's fucked up because there's a mechanical problem or because your Sol just couldn't find a way to block those monsters or de-randomize the quantum whatever?
I took a second to think about it. I'd seen Sol test plenty of weird inventions that he hadn't perfected just to see what happened. And I'd seen him create plenty of jury-rigged solutions to technical problems. But I'd never known him to be satisfied with shoddy work or an unfixed breakage.
If it was something easy like a mechanical problem, Saul would have said something so we could fix it, I finally said.
I think this is working as well as it can right now, and I probably need to find a version of you in another dimension who...
Then there's nothing I can do.
Saul turned around, shrugged, and wrapped his bathrobe around himself.
Sorry about that. Like I said, I haven't messed around with that quantum shit in a while. I wouldn't even know where to start.
I thought it was worth a shot, I sighed. Thanks for taking a look, and for not shooting anyone.
Thanks for not trying to abduct me or raid my shit, Sol said with a shrug. Now, listen, you don't have any money, and nearly everything you want is shit you can't get without a corporate license. Now, I can get you in touch with some people who can provide everything you think you might need for this homesteading thing you're trying to do here, up to and including an entire 3-story house printed out of super lightweight carbon fiber.
3 stories? My goodness!
Emma exclaimed.
I was going to be satisfied with one.
Here's the thing. Saul raised his index finger. These are hardcore, off-the-grid fuckers. Bunch of hacktivists and anarchists who like to build community gardens and shit like that. They don't take no card, no cash, or no company script. They like to barter, and they like crusty old vintage crap like the stuff you have in that cart. Especially old books, old tools, and those old-fashioned mason jars with the real glass. Noticed you have a lot of them in there, so you should be able to get some good shit.
I rather wish we'd taken more books from the library now. Or perhaps cleaned out the old hardware store a little more thoroughly. We cannot change what has been done in the past.
Fila started to rifle through the crates that held what was left of our haul from the hardware store in Emma's world.
And we cannot guess what will come in the future. We can only make our best choices in the now.
That is way profound, Fila, I commented. I grabbed the crate that she'd been rifling through, carried it over to the trailer, and set it down. These are cool, but I'm pretty sure we upgraded everything in here when we were in a Crasis's world, so all of this should be great barter material.
I suppose I can give up a few of my books to the cause.
Emma gazed mournfully into her crate of books, fished out a leather-bound copy of Les Miserables that was wider than it was tall, and sighed.
I was rather hoping to read some of these to our children, Dave.
You're expecting? Saul's face broke into a grin. I thought that cub thing the kitty girl said was a joke.
Already? I squeaked.
Not yet, but it'll certainly happen eventually, won't it?
Emma laid her hand on her stomach, set the brick of paper to the side, and held up a tattered copy of The Jungle Book.
Do you think anarchists like stories about talking animals?
I don't think they'll like Rudyard Kipling specifically. I took a look at the crates of jars, took a guess that the small jars with flower patterns printed right into the glass would rank higher for vintage fetishists than the larger plain jars, and grabbed a crate of the smaller jars for the Model T's trailer. White Man's Burden and everything? Les Mis is a good choice, though. I mean, do you really want to read 5 chapters of sewer logistics to... You know, actually keep that one. 5 chapters of sewer logistics sounds like it could prove to be useful.
I think I will like the talking animal story,
Fila said. She reached under one of the futons, pulled out about 6 wooden spears with her signature stone arrowheads carefully fitted into the ends, and set them in the trailer.
I will trade my spears. I can always make more of them as long as we are here. We need to consider logistics.
A Crasis curled her hands around a crate of the small glass jars.
I assume that we are all coming on this journey. How do we get there?
I wouldn't take the mammoth along, Saul said.
He peered out the door at Floppy, who was busy stripping leaves from the trees at the edge of the dirt circle.
And I'd cover the trailer with a top once you're done. You're going to attract enough attention with your clothes and your Model T, with your Dan Fogelberg and your Pac-Man video games.
Did you just quote basketball? I gasped.
Last damn good movie before everything became a AAA corporate orchestrated bullshit painting, Saul grinned at me. You know what they did to Trey Parker and Matt Stone?
Oh, don't tell me, I sighed. This could be the darkest timeline.
I will stay with Floppy,
Fila said.
He will be lonely without me. and I will make us more spears while I am here.
Whatever works, Saul shrugged. Now, you'd better listen up, because I don't want you to plug these directions into your cell phone or write them down. If you get caught or pulled over or something, you don't tell anyone where you're going or where you got anything. Understand?
Yeah. Part of me still wanted to laugh at the idea that vegetable seeds and gardening stuff was somehow forbidden in this universe, but it seemed like a pretty serious deal to Saul. I could tell the old man was a little more organized and down to earth than he'd been in my universe, but his whole spiel about aliens and getting probed made me wonder exactly how in touch with reality he still actually was.
I'm all ears. It's a little place called Magpie Mansion, Saul said. Looks like one of those big old Victorian houses from the outside. Inside, though, that's another story.
Oh, man, I know that place, I exclaimed. In my universe, they do concerts and shit there. I've gone there to see the Epoxies, the World Inferno, Friendship Society, Mischief Brew, Fish Guts, and the Stinkin' Orchestra. It's near Grand River and Trumbull, right?
All right, so you don't need directions, Saul said.
He headed toward the door of the cabin. Keep loading things. I'll be back in a second. Got a few things you'll need if you're heading into the city.
Oh, I would so love to see an orchestra,
Emma sighed. She pulled out a copy of Walden and carried it over to the Model T.
There. They ought to like that. All that going on about the virtues of living in the woods alone. Ugh. Even little Mowgli had Baloo and Bagheera.
Maybe we can save a few jars for cover, I joked. If they even still have live music there. Saul came back just as we were covering the filled trailer with a tarp. He had a piece of square paper in one hand and a pair of lightly tinted, oblong-shaped sunglasses that looked a lot like Morpheus's glasses from The Matrix.
You'll need these.
Saul slapped the piece of paper to the back side of the trailer gate, then he handed the glasses to me. He pointed at the black-and-white QR code printed on the shiny side of the sticky white paper.
That's your license plate. Says the car's an educational vehicle, so if anyone asks, your historical reenactors showing kids how fucking hard it is to live off the land, so they better respect everything the corporations do for them.
It isn't easy,
Emma agreed. What's with these? I lifted the glasses toward my face.
Don't put those on until you're ready, Saul warned.
So I lowered the glasses.
I just use those for when I go out. It has a fake profile and about $1,000 in spoofed money for tolls and shit.
I meant, what are these besides sunglasses? I clarified. Are these like Google glasses or something?
These are neuroactive mechanical soft and hardware ultra bifocals.
Saul tapped the glasses.
Everyone calls them Namshubs. There's a little computer in here. You know what computers are, right?
Yes, we have computers. So are these VR goggles?
They basically let you log into AOL, Saul said.
Has a transparent GUI that floats in front of your face and lets you get directions, transfer cash, make calls, do whatever. AOL is still around?
I held the glasses a few feet away from my face to see if I could check out the GUI without putting them right onto my face, but the world only looked mildly tinted through their lenses.
They run most of the fucking internet, yeah, Saul said. He nodded at Emma.
You might get away with not wearing a set since you're already dressed up like you came from Greenfield Village, but going out without your Namshub is a good way to get yourself stopped by the fucking pigs, and you don't need that. Raz, you might need to stay down in the back seat until you all get to the Magpies.
I will take appropriate precautions,
Acrasis said.
So it is like a law? I asked.
You have to have a pair of these on if you're driving, or what?
Probable cause, Saul said. Shows you're an irresponsible driver.
Shouldn't it be the other way around? I asked. In my world, cops pull people over for having their cell phones out when they're driving, unless you're getting directions. They call it distracted driving, like drunk driving.
Look, I don't decide what bullshit cops are allowed to get away with. I just try to warn people. And no, there's no law that you have to have a pair of Namshubs if you're going to exist out in public. People just look at you like you got your cock hanging out. You can't buy anything, and you can't fucking go anywhere they can keep you out of.
Oh. I ran my thumb over the Namshub's frame. I couldn't feel anything bulky enough for a computer chip, although it was clear that computer technology had advanced in a slightly different direction from my own world. I peered at the arms of the glasses, felt a pang of nostalgia at the triangular AOL logo, and raised my eyebrows at the bitten Apple logo. Oh, that seems like a huge pain in the ass if you don't have one.
It's fucking impossible to exist without those. Saul shook his head. The government couldn't even win the space race without getting Kubrick to fake a moon landing, and now they lost the mind control war to the company that got grannies on Usenet. Only difference is the government's fucking dumb. You pass a law forcing everyone to get mind control chips, you're going to have a revolution on your hands, and it wouldn't have worked. So some fucking dot-com geniuses figured out that people will buy any stupid thing you want them to buy if you charge them a lot of money for it and tell them how much it's going to improve their lives. Then the banks got on board. The big three got on board. Even the fucking grocery stores got on board. Easiest mind control shtick ever. That sounded a lot more like the Saul I knew.
Are they safe for Dave to wear?
Emma frowned at the glasses.
They're just fucking annoying if you're not a shubby sheeple.
Saul nodded at me.
Just wanted to warn you, kid. Go ahead and get used to the interface before you start to drive.
Here goes nothing. I wasn't sure if this was real cyberpunk dystopia stuff or just Saul being, well, Saul. I slipped the goggles on, but I wasn't prepared for the nightmare that I saw.